by getting all chicks to vote. Look around you. You can't ignore these issues when they're all in your face. So take a stand, register, and rock the vote, baby.
MFO Medford 91.5 FM. It is the big picture. Derek, Gary, and Shea Spillane with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 855-915-9636. That is the telephone number. Those are the digits that you call to, or you dial to call into the show. 855-915-9636. One more time. 855-915-9636. It's been a few weeks since I've done that, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Is that why I'm rusty?
I was going to say, you're dusting it off, D.
I'm just coming apart here. It's winter. Seasonal affective disorder is in full swing.
Yeah, I'm ready for that to be and out of here.
And it's not even like it's been snowing. It's just dark.
Yeah.
You know, it's the dark that gets to me. I don't like, I love nighttime, but I don't like this much of it.
To be honest, it's weird, like, you know, there's lots of things that have made me a bit down in the dumps lately. But, like, I didn't realize how much it was the weather until a couple weeks ago when we had that, like, random 65-degree Saturday.
Yeah.
And I was out. I went out for a hike in, I think it was in Daniel Webster Sanctuary in Marshfield. And, like, I was like, wow, I feel really good right now. Yeah. And, like, it was almost like I had to talk myself down of, like, no, Shay, it's going to be 20 degrees in like 2 days.
See, I just walked around.
Chill.
I walked around that day and I'm like, this is wrong. It's too warm. I don't like it at this time of year. You know, days like today where it's like 40, I'm like, all right, that's good. That's nice. Passable winter weather.
See, I want some 60.
Yeah, see, I want that in the spring because it just, you know, when it's nice out and it's dark, I'm just like, what?
Yeah,
no.
And like I said, it was a bit of a tease. Like, it's that's why, like, I was talking to somebody about this today, how they said that their favorite season was the fall.
Yeah.
Over summer, and, like, everybody gets angry about that. And I said, well, my favorite season's spring, but I see where your head's at.
Yeah.
But for me, it's like, that's part of what I love about the spring and why that day a couple weeks ago was such a tease.
Everybody loves, well, most people, I think, love autumn, but it's the reality is, you know, New England, 2 weeks of autumn, 50 weeks of suck. And that's pretty much what
yeah.
you get.
And it's like the beginning of autumn is pretty much just the end of summer.
Yeah.
But for me, spring is where it's at because it's like every time that it's over 55 degrees, it's like, you're like, yeah. And it's just going to keep getting warmer and everything's the best. And da da da. And I mean, I'm not going to discount that my birthday's May 3rd. So like the spring holds multiple significances for me. And God, the way things are going, I mean, May 3rd is probably going to be around the beginning of spring now. It used to be when I was a kid, like March coming around was like, hey, sweatshirt weather. But that in recent history has not seemed to be the case.
We'll see if the winter lingers as it has in the last couple of years.
Let's see how psychic groundhog really is.
So a little bit of housekeeping.
Housekeeping?
Because I get in huge trouble if I don't mention this off the top of the show. And Molly is at home bouncing up and down and, you know, shaking her fists in the air and screaming. Next year, I'm going to say this right now, Molly gets to host the Oscars show. Because 2 years in a row now, she has won. Final score, for those of you playing along at home, Molly came up with 19 correct answers, correct picks.
Damn, Molly.
I had 17 and she had 15. So Molly gets to host the show next year.
I was definitely, I was rooting for the underdog in some of those, I will say.
Yes.
And I was doing a lot of theorizing, forgetting that people in Hollywood don't have a soul.
If, here's the thing. If you follow me on Facebook and you followed my picks to the letter, because I said this on Facebook, I think I mentioned, I don't know if I mentioned this on the air last week or not. I got one wrong, and I knew I got one wrong, and that was best original screenplay. What? Because
what ended up winning? I forget.
Parasite.
Parasite.
Which?
I mean, basically, anytime you're like, "What ended up winning?" I forget the answer is Parasite.
I'll get to that in a second.
Whew.
I'll get to that in a second.
I really thought it was going to, like, that I thought I was correct on. I thought Knives Out was going to get it.
But
just because it was the only thing it was nominated in.
My method of picking Oscars is based on analytics, right? And analytics is looking at the past to try and predict the future. So the things that I never want to hear are the phrases, this is the first time ever. And breaking with tradition. I never want to hear those because that means you've gone and done something that has never been done before, and that's Parasite. No foreign film had ever won Best Original Screenplay. No foreign film had ever won Best Picture. There's precedent for Best Director. So two of those awards I'm automatically not going to get, but I was leaning toward Parasite for Best Original Screenplay. And thinking about it and thinking about what that award has been for writer directors in recent years, mm-hmm. I went over to Tarantino basically thinking, even though I picked Once Upon a Time in Hollywood for Best Picture, if for whatever reason he didn't get that, they were going to give him Best Original Screenplay. And then Molly reminded me that he had two. Okay. Here's a hard.
I didn't say, what is. He has one for Pulp Fiction.
He's got one for Inglourious Basterds.
Oh, yeah.
Or Django, or one of those.
Oh, yeah, I think you're right. I think it's Django.
Here is a hard data point to take with you when you are trying to figure out next year's Oscars. Nobody wins three in the same category. Mm. Nobody wins three in the same category, with the exceptions of composers and Meryl Streep. That's it. Okay. Meryl Streep.
And that's because Meryl Streep is perfection.
Yeah, Meryl Streep gets all the Oscars. But nobody.
Meryl Streep gets all the Oscars.
Nobody wins three. Nobody wins
that's a very
three.
Good, that's. Yeah, I'm trying to think.
And once Molly brought up last week, and I amended my. I went with it because whatever I pick on the air is going on my ballot. So I had to live with it. But once Molly brought that up on the air, I immediately said, oh, damn, I got this one wrong. So that got me up to, that would have got me to 18 if I'd been able to choose Parasite. I was also correct on best sound editing and best sound mixing.
So
sound editing went to Ford versus Ferrari. Sound mixing went to 1917.
I was going to say, I was right on the Ford versus Ferrari.
Yeah. But
I was wrong. I thought that it was going to be Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
I told everyone just to double down, pick one of those two movies, go with it in both. You wind up giving up a point if you do it that way, but it's safer than getting them both wrong.
Yeah, like one of those was going to be right in one of those.
Yeah, that's my little hedge. So if you followed those picks to the letter, you actually would have come out with 19, and Molly and I would have tied. But I doubled down on 1917. I did not pick Parasite. A lot of people in my office pool actually picked Parasite for Best Picture, and that pool is weighted. So all the damage that I'd already done getting most of the minor categories right was for naught. Molly was correct on Best Live Action Short Film going to The Neighbor's Window, which was my initial pick, and that's where I wanted to go. Until I started seeing a lot of support build around Brotherhood and said, okay, I have to go with that. So my process failed me this time out. And it failed me in part because I didn't follow my process.
My dad just called me. Should I have just picked it up on the air?
Yeah. Why? Am I that boring?
On the air. No, this is the second week in a row that he's forgotten that it's Wednesday night.
You might want to see a doctor about that.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't know what day of the week it is.
Well, more, he's forgotten it's my Wednesday night.
I gotcha.
What was I going to say? Well, that's, it's interesting because I mean, above everything else, like in terms of like all the fist pounding arguments that I made last week, I was very, very sure that I was going to be right about, well, no one ever wins Best Director and Best Picture.
Right.
Like, I really thought that I just brought that on through. And I also, for the sake of just like not pissing people off, I really didn't think that the same thing that won Best Foreign Language Film would also win.
Usually
would
doesn't
also
happen.
Win. Like, it, I mean, and we were saying off the air before the show, I was saying I loved watching him kiss the Oscars together like I did with my Barbies when I was a little girl. Yeah. And it, it's just one of those things, like, they should have just given them seats on the stage.
I know.
I mean,
I have a feeling.
It was back and forth.
They should have given Bong Joon-ho a seat on the stage, yeah. Or at least moved him closer. I have a feeling.
I was gonna say, he got his steps in that night.
That Parasite wound up getting Best Picture because it was everybody's second choice.
That was like the 50% thing that 50%, you were talking about.
Yeah. Some people had it first, but most people were like 1917 or Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and then Parasite was the number two. And
yeah, it was like when you're, what was I going to say? It was like when you're voting between like two rivals for class president, and then everybody that doesn't want to get involved is just like, oh, I'll vote for the pothead that joined the race as a joke.
Yeah.
Like,
or,
not to say that Parasite is the pothead, but you know what I mean. It's like well, here's the random one that I'll, you know what
yeah.
I mean?
Or Michael Bloomberg, if we want to use
it. I didn't say.
We're going to talk about.
Speaking of which.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that in a little bit. We're going to talk about the coronavirus. We're going to talk about the new movies that are coming out this weekend.
That I hear coronavirus. I mean, all I can think is Mexican beach getting drunk.
Exactly.
I hear coronavirus. I'm like, who's got a lime?
did you know that the cure for the coronavirus is you stick a lime wedge down somebody's throat and then shake them up and down for 5 minutes? And it goes away.
Oh, I was thinking actually that it would be to drink water with Montezuma's Revenge. Mm. Like, you know, just like the antidote, the opposite of Corona.
They don't have any limes in China, which is why people aren't.
Yep. No limes in China.
So anyway, what do we got going on in the local news, Shea Spillane?
In the local news. Well, I have a personal plug that I'm going to be talking about for the next couple months. I don't know if it's the time to talk about it right now or.
Is it newsworthy?
For me.
Yeah, okay. Give me something of interest to our wider audience.
Well, okay.
Now you're figuring out a way to segue into the thing in a way that I won't shut you down.
No, well, I mean, it is. I forget if I've already talked about it in the past. Did I talk about Father Bell's Place in the past?
Briefly.
About their facility?
Yes. Okay. No, that's relevant. So...
Okay, so this is based on an article from the Patriot Ledger. For those of you who don't know, Father Bell's Place is... Father Bill's Place is a homeless shelter in Quincy, and it serves, I mean, it, the numbers are staggering for the amount of people. It serves thousands of people a year, whether it be for a place to stay. It's temporary housing. So it's not, you know, it's not like a halfway house or anything like that. It's emergency shelter, but place to stay, shower, warm clothes, basic food, like a meal, your basic human necessities. For those of you who know Boston very well, Quincy has been doing a lot of building up over the past couple of years. And as a result of this, the Quincy Police Station is expanding. And where is it? It is expanding to is right on top of Father Bell's Place. They are literally knocking the building down to expand the police station. So they are allocating the land across the street from the existing structure to build a new facility. And the new facility is going to be even better. It's going to be three stories. They're going to have semi-permanent housing. So for their frequent flyers who are, you know, actively staying sober, trying to get jobs, all of that, they're going to provide studio apartments for them. And it's going to work kind of on like a sliding scale in terms of rent and how much they will cover. But it's going to cost a ton of money. So I just wanted to put this out here now. So if as I talk about it over the course of the next couple of months, I am actually going to be putting on a benefit comedy show in Quincy at Sons of Italy on April 2nd. Still in the planning stages at the moment. But I wanted to put that out there so everyone who is in the South Shore listening to us, you can mark your calendars.
You getting Tony V for that? Get Tony V for
I'm
that.
I'm thinking getting Tony V for that.
Tony V's in that Hyundai commercial. You got to get Tony V.
I was going to say, that guy ain't got no driver.
That guy ain't got no driver.
But I will say, like, they really need a ton of money as soon as possible. So if you want to help before that, go to helpfbms.org. So that's Father Bill's Mainspring. So helpfbms.org, and you can donate there.
Cool.
But I just wanted to give that.
All right, we'll let you plug that on the air.
A quick plug.
That's
it is relevant too, because I mean, it's relevant to, especially since a lot of the overshoot from everyone knows if I say the words Mass Ave, I'm talking about Methadone Mile, all of the offshoots from there end up at Father Bill's, and a lot of them are the people who want to stay away from where they have access to things they're trying to kick.
Right.
Let's put it that way.
Right.
So Father Bill's is very helpful in that. I actually volunteer there a couple times a month.
Nice.
And yeah, it's a good place.
So do your part to support Father Bill's. What's the website again, Shay Spillane?
It is helpfbms.org.
Helpfbms.org. Check that out.
And you can donate as much as you can afford. Donate $3 and it will make a difference.
They should be shaking down the people building all those condos for money for this. Just me.
Oh, they are.
Just right. Should be shaking them down more. Here's a fun thing. From CBS Boston. A ballot question that would let convenience stores and other food stores sell beer and wine is drawing criticism from some researchers and substance abuse coordinators who say it could result in more crime and alcohol consumption. The question would let local authorities issue licenses allowing food stores to sell wine and malt beverages to be consumed off the premises. Local licensing authorities would have the discretion to determine the number of food store licenses they issue. The new licenses would be in addition to existing licenses issued for the sale of alcoholic beverages. The licenses would not include the sale of hard liquor. This is beer and wine, Boda Boxes, and Zima only. Okay. The new licenses could be issued as soon as December. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. If the question is approved by voters in November, there would also be no limits on the number of licenses any one company could control after a phase-in period. We have a weird law here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, to go with most of our other weird laws, that says...
Yes, we have so many pretty weird laws.
If you own a chain, if you own a chain of gas stations, if you own a chain of supermarkets, if you own a chain of convenience stores, you can only sell beer and wine in five of them.
Interesting.
We are, I believe, the only state in the union that does that. And it's
so, like, theoretically, though, say it's a chain of mobiles.
Right.
But there are individual owners for each of the franchises. Does that law apply?
No, because
it
goes back to a common ownership group. No. David Jernigan, a professor of health law and policy at the Boston University School of Public Health, said there is a close tie between the easy availability of alcohol and crime. He said because Massachusetts and Boston, by extension, has limits on the number of alcohol outlets, the relationship between alcohol outlets and violent crime is weaker than in many other cities. This is where David Jernigan is incorrect. Because Massachusetts only allows five licenses per major, you know, per chain.
Yeah.
You know, whether convenience store, gas station, supermarket, whatever. The owners of those chains have a tendency to concentrate their beer and wine licenses in the places with the biggest populations. As a result, You are going to find beer and wine more frequently at supermarkets, gas stations, and convenience stores in Boston, Cambridge, and Brookline than in other parts of the state.
Yeah, than in, like, Scituate.
Right. Now, and actually, Martha's Vineyard is another one where it's like any place you walk into, you're going to find beer and wine.
Yeah.
Most of those are mom and pop operations, but there it is. Now, I don't doubt for a second that increasing alcohol availability in places like Brockton and Fall River is going to make an already combative population more so. But taking David Jernigan at face value, sir, you're ignoring the evidence that is right outside your front door. You live in a place where there is enhanced access to alcohol. And I don't know that Boston and Cambridge and Brookline are necessarily any more or less violent than any other part of the state. And they have nightclubs all over the place and bars all over the place, which is where, you know, what we're talking about when he says crime, okay, what we're talking about is bar fights. What we're talking about is,
it's stuff that this really isn't going to change very much.
Yeah.
Well, the thing for me, having lived... trying to think. I'd say, I think pretty much, yeah, every other city that I've ever lived in, it's been commonplace, beer and wine in, you know, you go to the gas station, there's beer and wine in there. Like, it's just, that's the norm. I will say that the one thing to be said for it actually having the opposite effect is, think about how often, and I'm not saying everybody, but how often a lot of people, I have definitely been guilty of this, go into a liquor store with the intention of just buying like a six pack of beer or something and then go, you know, maybe I'll get a pint of whiskey as well since I'm here.
Right.
Or, you know, maybe, oh, it'll be funny if I get a couple of nips. We'll all do shots at the beginning of before we go out. Whereas, and it's a lot of times people that maybe normally wouldn't get hard alcohol. That is not the case with me, but with a lot of people, that's the case. When you have it available at a place that's a little more, when you have just beer and wine available somewhere, it's much more likely that your average person who normally wouldn't get liquor isn't going to go out of their way to then go to a liquor store and get that.
Right.
They're much more like, I'm picking up some spaghetti and a six pack for tonight.
Especially if they're selling something like Four Loko, and that's really all you need. here's some more. More outlets, this is a quote, more outlets also mean more price competition, which means cheaper alcohol, which literally hundreds of studies, I love it when people say this, literally hundreds of studies, Shay, have shown is associated with more drinking and more negative consequences, including violent crime, Jernigan told the State House committee this week. I don't know if you understand how pricing works in Massachusetts, but more booze has never resulted in lower prices. If it did, I could go get drinks in Boston cheaper than I can out in the suburbs.
I would say it just...
And that ain't happening.
If anything, it just encourages rebranding and special promotions that actually end up costing you more money.
The potential for crime and other negative behaviors like property damage, public urination, and noise is made worse when those buying the alcohol drink it off premises and are more likely unsupervised, he added. Literally hundreds of studies, Shay.
I don't know what's more annoying about that phrase, literally or hundreds of studies. Like, when you say hundreds of studies, you mean like 201? And how many of them were done by a college kid for a class project?
Matthew Durand, a representative for the coalition pushing for the question, including Cumberland Farms, WBZ felt the need to tell us that Cumbies is behind this, said the threats to public safety are exaggerated. He said it's hard to draw a direct link between crime and beer and wine availability when there could be other factors involved. Elizabeth Parsons, a substance abuse prevention coordinator at the Mystic Valley Public Health Coalition, said the greater availability of beer and wine will inevitably lead to more drinking, including among underage people. No. Not if you enforce the laws and suspend licenses of places that sell to minors.
Yeah.
Easy.
That's like saying there being more people selling crack means that people who normally wouldn't smoke crack are going to start smoking crack.
Yeah.
No. people generally aren't going to smoke crack if they haven't already been smoking crack, even if everyone's offering it to them.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And the miners aren't going to do any better buying booze at the gas station than they would at the liquor store if the people at the gas station follow the law, which they're going to want to do. Because once they realize how much booze sales are worth to them, they are going to defend their licenses. You know, it's always.
I would say, if anything, they'll be cracking down way more.
It's always cute to watch somebody from Massachusetts like walk into a gas station or a convenience store or a supermarket in New Hampshire, Rhode Island, Maine, Connecticut, any of the states around us, and be like, "Oh my God, they sell beer and wine here." Yeah, they do. That's called normal life. In the other 49 states of the union.
Everywhere else. That's why when I was like searching my brain for like, wait, was that the case in like the four other cities I've lived in?
Yeah.
In the United States?
Yep.
Wait, of freaking course it was.
Yep. Yeah.
Because this is the case everywhere else.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, it's just, again, like, I remember the blue laws. I remember like explaining to somebody once, there's somebody visiting Boston. And this is back when I drank, obviously. And there was, we were doing something. It was like a barbecue or something on a Sunday. And it was 11. And they were like, let's go to the liquor store. And this is, I mean, this is like 5 years back. So it has gotten a little more lax since then. But it was like 11. I said, let's go to the liquor store. I said, we have to wait an hour. They're like, what do you mean? And I was like, liquor stores are only open 12 to 6 on Sunday.
Yeah.
And they were like, that's preposterous.
Yeah.
And I was like, you want to hear preposterous?
Yeah.
They used to not be open at all.
I remember those days. Oh,
yeah.
God, do I remember those days.
That's, I mean, me too. You have to realize I had a fake ID starting when I was 16.
We had a friend from upstate New York who would come back on, so he'd go home for the weekend and he'd come back on Sunday night with cases of Utica Club. And oh boy, Utica Club is not a good beer. But oh boy, did we love Utica Club.
I would say anytime a beer is named after something really local.
Yeah.
You know, like I remember when I lived in Seattle, Rainier.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Rainier was the big, like, made hey, with... got 16 bucks, I can get a 30.
Yeah, exactly. made with the waters gushing off the mountain, right?
But it's, you know, that was their Narragansett. You know, like Narragansett, not a perfect example.
Yep. Cheap local brow. Every region's got it.
But I mean, like I said, the thing is, to me, it's a matter of, it's the same reason that I think that pot should be legal. And obviously these are not two totally comparable things, but it's more just that it's not a matter of like, oh, is this going to be like awesome for society? Is it going to make society way better? No, it's not. But it is going to put us all on a level playing field. Like, you know, it's, and especially where like, I mean, I basically think if it's legal, you should be able to get it at the places where it makes sense to get it. I mean, the sheer fact that speaking of, like I said, the thing about spaghetti, you're making an Italian dinner and you have to make two stops so that you can get the red wine to go with the chicken parm. Like it doesn't, like I said, totally don't sell hard liquor in grocery stores. I don't think that's a good idea. I don't think having, because hard liquor is freaking strong.
California, they do.
I know they do.
Like, it's boom, here's the wine and spirit section. Like,
how do you think I ended up drinking so much more when I lived in California?
Yeah, exactly.
But again, I'm speaking as somebody, like, that's the thing, is I'm speaking as somebody who has lived in every single one of these situations. Like, in New York, and I believe New Hampshire is the same way, they don't sell beer and wine or hard liquor in the same place.
Correct.
That to me makes sense, because beer and wine you get to have with a barbecue or to have with dinner. Hard liquor is like, I am doing liquid drugs.
Yeah. Well, not so.
That's
what you're drinking.
You're drinking, but you know what I mean? Like, it's like, it's a different type of alcohol, and I don't just mean in the content. It's very rare that someone will say, like, I'm making an Italian dinner. Ooh, I need some vodka for this.
Can I say that I'm excited that Cumberland Farms is sponsoring this, because I'm looking forward to the day when I can walk in there, pick up some gas, get my beef jerky, and pick up a six-pack of Cumbie's Ale or Cumbie's Light.
This is America.
Like 99
we
cents
should
a
have
beer.
One-stop shopping.
Right, 99. Come on down, get your 99-cent Cumbie's Light.
And that's the thing, is it's not
Cumbie's
to say...
Light.
I mean, I think the convenience stores should be exactly what they already are with booze. You know what I mean? Like, if I'll give you a perfect example. When I was in the Berkshires, I needed some milk for my nieces. My nieces, I don't drink like cow milk because I'm a bougie millennial.
Yeah.
But I needed regular, like.
At least you admit it.
Unsweetened almond milk's good, okay? It has a lot of protein.
Okay. Whatever.
And it doesn't go bad as fast. But I needed to get whole milk for my nieces. And like, I went to three different convenience stores because apparently everybody needed whole milk for their nieces. And the convenience store has one row of whole milk and one row of 2% and one row of skim. And there's like four things of it in each row.
Yeah.
And they don't have nine different brands.
Right.
They don't have almond milk. They don't have, you know, they just have that. And that's the way that it should be. Like, that's the thing. I'm not saying put a whole giant beer section in the convenience store, but just like you said, be able to go and
look. There's got to be a big beer section convenience store.
There is. Here's the ones where we already have it. There's like a three case wide.
But here's the thing: the Commonwealth has already taken away a big chunk of business from convenience stores, gas stations. Not so much supermarkets, but convenience stores and gas stations because they can't sell vapes anymore. They've cut back on the kinds of cigarettes that they can sell. That's money out the door for those businesses. So if you let them sell alcohol, they have the ability to recoup some of that business.
Yeah.
And we should want our small businesses to thrive. And
before we all just, America just becomes one giant Walmart.
Yeah. And you're always going to have towns. You know, there's always going to be towns like Sharon. And
I love how disdainfully you just said that. Sharon.
And Hamilton that say,
Hamilton.
Well, you shall not buy beer and wine at the gas stations in our fair hamlet. That's that's a Danvers and Stoughton thing.
How dare you?
Yeah. Meanwhile, they're buying scratchies and fighting in the parking lot of the Cumbies over in Brockton. You know.
Do you know what's weird? I knew in that moment you were going to say Brockton.
It's always Brockton. It's always Brockton.
Yeah.
When it's not Fall River.
I think Brockton's the new Quincy, I've decided. Like it used to be when someone...
Quincy is still the new Quincy.
No, but it used to be that when somebody was talking about something like trashy, it was like automatically you go to Quincy. You can't get away with that as much. Just like my part of Quincy. That's the only place that...
More Fall River than Brockton these days.
Yeah. Well, I do like when I tell people that I moved back to Quincy, they're like, oh, Quincy's getting really nice. Well, except, you know, the Copeland Street area is still like a heroin wasteland.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I live off Copeland Street.
Yeah. North Shore, we all just bag on Lawrence and move on from there.
Yeah, Lawrence.
WMFO Medford.
WMFO. So did you hear about what happened at Children's Hospital?
I heard that they got hacked.
They did.
And I guess somebody was looking for the do we know if somebody was looking for the Bitcoins? Usually they're looking for the Bitcoins.
Well, that's what they're trying to figure out. Basically, like, there was a malware attack. It disrupted hundreds of doctors' computers, which, as many of you probably know, that's pretty much what they use as charts now for a large portion of things. Like, that is where everything is. Everyone just carries around iPads. But as soon as they learned about it, like, the IT team worked very, like, quickly to quarantine everything to make sure that it didn't go any further. A lot of patients had to reschedule their appointments because they didn't have any of the calendars or the health records. And, you know, it's pretty scary when you think of, the fact that this is Children's Hospital. You're not bringing your kids to Children's Hospital for like a routine physical.
Like, right.
A lot of the parents actually like ended up wanting, like they ended up trying to take them somewhere else because these are kids who are actually sick.
Now, what I heard yesterday, and you may know more about this than I do, was that the hospital itself wasn't affected. The hospital systems weren't affected, but all the pediatrician systems were.
Exactly. So it was literally, it was like, okay, so the general, like the actual computers at the hospital were fine.
Yeah.
But it was the individual, like I said, like, you know, when you watch Grey's Anatomy and everyone's walking around with their own iPad,
yeah,
that's what it was. So suffice it to say, I mean, this to me...
Does anyone have any Bitcoin for me to unlock this? What, Bitcoin?
Yeah.
Bitcoin?
Like, for me, it seems like... I mean, I'm not trying to, like, conspiracy theorize here, but it seems like a direct attack on the doctors themselves.
It would be nice if the government would actually make prosecuting these kinds of crimes a priority. Because this is the sort of thing that should not happen in a first world nation. Okay? You should not go to the hospital and all the doctors' computers are down because some idiot in Latvia or Ukraine or Nigeria or wherever is holding them ransom for Bitcoin.
It's literally holding life's hostage.
Yeah. Isn't this supposed to be the world of tomorrow?
Well, and that's, I mean, the reason that this story had particular significance for me is the computers at my office, the system was updated over the weekend. They weren't done doing that until about 1:30 on Monday. We opened at 9 on Monday, which means that
four and a half hours,
there were no computers. And everyone was going bonkers.
Hi, no computers, call back at 2. No computers, call back at 2.
And it made me realize, too, like, even things like, like somebody calling to make an appointment. Can I come in at 3 o'clock on Tuesday? I don't know.
Yeah. You can. I don't know if anybody's
going to
be available.
The lawyer you want to see might not actually be here. Yeah. And might be in court for the next 4 days. I mean, we did do a good job of like printing out schedules as soon, like right before we shut down the computers and things like that. But it made me realize, I mean, how much, like it made me think about like the whole day I was thinking about, well, first I was playing on the typewriter and really annoying everybody because typewriters are loud. But it made me think about this one time my father and I walked into a restaurant where we had a reservation. And the hostess was like palpably freaking out. Usually even if something's going wrong, you try to keep your cool at the front of the restaurant. No, she was losing her mind. And I looked at her, I was like, to the point where I was like, are you all right? And she said, we have like 15 different reservations for tonight. And I know that at least like 6 of them are big parties. And I don't know what time they're coming in. And like our open table is down. And I don't know what any of them are. I don't even know what a single reservation is. And I don't know. I'm freaking out. It just went down like 3 minutes ago.
Yikes.
And I looked at her. I was like, oh, yeah. When I used to work at a restaurant, when I would host this, I would always like write down each one like right when I got there for fear of that happening halfway through the shift. And she just glared at me and I was like, you know, for next time. We're one of the reservations, if that helps.
Yeah.
But like,
I don't want to hear your suggestion right now.
But I mean, that's a freaking restaurant. You know what I mean? Like, that's not a kid coming in for his leukemia treatment.
Right. Exactly.
Like, and again, thinking the fact that the patient records are in here, it's like, you know, I don't know too much about treatments for little people diseases and cancers and whatnot, but I imagine that the doses, the chemical you're giving them, what have you, is pretty specific. It's pretty like, this is how much we had of them on this helpful poison yesterday, and now we're, you know what I mean? Like, it does.
Could we expend even a fraction of the resources that were wasted on the Russia investigation and the Trump impeachment to go after the people who are doing this? Just a fraction of those resources. Don't need all of them. Don't need a big headline grabbing federal case made out of it day after day after day. Just a fraction of those resources.
Yeah. I'm going to say, I do love that neither of us even bothered to touch on the Trump impeachment, like, on our radio show, just because we're like, hey, exactly what we thought was going to happen happened.
Yeah, that was a clown show.
Yeah,
that was a clown
show. That was silly.
Speaking of the clown show. New Hampshire primary.
I was going to say, is this going to be New Hampshire coronavirus? Because either way, it's a good joke.
New Hampshire primary was last night. Congratulations to Bernie Sanders, who got a whopping 26% of the votes. Congratulations to Pete Buttigieg.
Mayor Pete,
who came in second. Amy Klobuchar came in third. They all go home with delegates, which is nice. And no one else does, including Joe Biden, who just kind of skipped out of town. He skipped town before it was even done.
Yeah.
24% for Pete Buttigieg, 20% for Amy Klobuchar. Now, we actually got results from this one, which is more than Iowa can say.
I was going to say, I mean, Iowa must just be like facepalming right now.
We didn't get a chance to talk about Iowa last week. And Can we talk about how bad last week was for the Democrats? Because it's a week that opened with Iowa utterly falling down.
Screwing up.
You had one job, Iowa. One job.
And the whole, this is the one time, this is the one time that the whole country is looking at Iowa, like ever. Like, we never care what's going on in Iowa.
Do you know how much clout Iowa
no
has?
No offense, Iowa, but I've been to your state. Like, the most important thing for me to take a picture of was at a rest stop.
But do you know how much clout Iowa has in Washington because they are the first in the nation caucus?
Oh, I know. This is their thing.
Like, they could call up senators and be like, hey, we'd like a thing. And the senators are like, okay, you're Iowa. Yes,
you're
like,
oh my God, totally.
Yeah. New Hampshire gets the same clout from it. And you utterly failed, utterly and completely failed to deliver any kind of meaningful election results.
With the whole nation watching.
This is with the whole nation watching. And after the candidates have spent millions of dollars and countless hours of time between themselves and their volunteers, this is the equivalent of going out and buying a Super Bowl television ad. You spend $25 million on the Super Bowl ad, and then it doesn't run. And you sit there at the end of the game, and you're like, what happened to our Super Bowl?
Yeah, like, what do we do all that rigmarole for?
And Fox calls up, they're like, hey, you know what? We'll run it for you during the Masked Singer next week. And you're like, I don't want the Masked Singer. Yeah. I bought a Super Bowl ad.
All the dummies that watch the Super Bowl don't watch The Masked Singer.
This was it. This was the big event. This was the kickoff. And nothing. And then the week ends with Trump dancing around Washington because, as expected, the impeachment failed.
Yeah. Yeah. Seriously, talk about a kick in the pants for the Democrats of a week. Kick in the pants of a week.
A good week for the Democrats.
No.
So New Hampshire at least restored some level of normalcy to all of this. But these results are interesting.
Yeah.
Everybody's talking about their winners and losers from New Hampshire. I'm going to surprise you with a couple of these. Pete Buttigieg, absolutely a winner coming out of this. This is another strong showing. He's pretty much knotted up with Bernie Sanders.
I would say they are like nipping at each other's heels here.
He's got one more delegate than Bernie Sanders right now.
Mm-hmm.
Still does not have the support of black voters. And that's going to be an issue for him going forward.
And could it be because he's the whitest person ever?
No, it's because he's gay. Apparently the fact that he's gay is the issue.
Really?
Yeah.
See, like, for me, that's like part of him. You know what I mean? Like, that's not, I don't look and I'm like, that dude's gay. Like, that's when I listen to him speak. That's not like what's going on in my brain.
Yeah. This is what's being reported back, is that, you know, hey, he's gay and the black voters don't like that.
Was that from literally hundreds of studies?
Yes, literally hundreds of studies. Amy Klobuchar, definitely a winner in this.
Yeah.
You know, you picked up delegates. I don't know that anyone expected her to finish third like a week ago.
I bet Elizabeth Warren didn't expect her to finish third.
No. Well, we'll get to that. Klobuchar had a really,
really don't like Elizabeth Warren.
Klobuchar had a really strong showing at the debate on Friday night. The big thing for her coming out of New Hampshire is momentum, because now everybody is looking at her. Money is flowing
in. Yeah, kind of going, huh?
Organization's getting bigger. And it's like, all right, that's, you know.
I will say that I forget if it was on CNN or where I took it. There was, you know, and I am a Democrat to vote for Bernie. I'm not a Democrat. I registered Democrat to vote for Bernie. but it was like, who is your ideal Democratic candidate? And it had you like answer questions on all of these issues and then would say, like, told you whose side you were on for each individual issue. And then at the end was like, hey, this is who you should vote for. I got Klobuchar. And I was very surprised by that.
Yeah.
Because it was just, she was like, in my head, she was, I always call the kind of fringe candidates, like, she was a Ross Perot. She was just a, yeah, you're on the ballot, but like, or not on the ballot, but like, you're in the primary, but like, are we being serious here? Like, do we really think you have a shot? But this, like you said, like, New Hampshire definitely is making me and everybody go, Klobuchar.
Yeah.
Look at you.
And it's interesting because, you
especially because it's not like her home state or even near her home state. You
she's,
know,
She's a lot like Pete Buttigieg. You know, she's a middle of the road, Midwestern, or almost Northwestern, Midwestern Democrat, blue collar, not a military veteran, which Pete Buttigieg is. But just, you know,
I would say his views with like military service are bonkers, by the way.
Common sense, consensus builder, all of those things that moderates tend to cling to. And it's like, okay.
Well, and I think that that is like, I think that that's what's so interesting about this election, because obviously there is a big swing towards Bernie. But
is there?
Well, okay. I'm saying obviously there's a big swing towards Bernie with some people. There's like the people who really wanted Bernie to get on the ticket in 2016 are like guns blazing for him. But the thing that makes this election so interesting is that it is less, for people who really sit down and think about it, and for people who don't want Trump to be president anymore, it's less about this is the candidate I want to be president, and more about this is the candidate that I can get behind enough that I think enough other people from different viewpoints will get behind enough to beat Trump. You know what I mean? It's like Bernie, moderates aren't going to go for Bernie hardcore. Like, you know what I mean? Anyone that's, because there are a lot, I'm not saying, trust me, most Trump supporters are like thumping their hearts, Trump supporters, same as they were in 2016.
Yes.
But there are some that like voted like I've talked to a lot of people, and I try not to do what some other liberals my age do, because I consider myself moderate leaning liberal. I don't think that I'm like a bleeding heart liberal, but a lot of people will say like, you voted for Trump, like screw you. I say, can I just ask you, why did you vote for Trump? Like, yeah. What was it that did it? And
America.
Sometimes I get that answer. Other times I get the he'll run the country like a business answer, which then I have to bite my tongue from saying, you've seen what's happened to all his businesses, right?
Yeah.
But the
yes,
most...
But we're now in the golden halo in that moment where the Trump management of the business looks great before it all collapses. And he's timed the golden halo perfectly.
It's like the group
perfectly.
Photo they took of Enron before all of that went to poo.
Yeah, exactly.
But...
Because... Let's be fair. Things in this country right now are pretty damn good.
But he's taking credit for a lot more than it is actually.
He's taking credit for things that he can't entirely take credit for. Yeah. Every president does. Okay. Bill Clinton sat there and drew that big zero for the budget deficit.
And played the saxophone.
On the whiteboard. When he was benefiting from the initial surge in online growth, which pumped billions of dollars into the U.S. Treasury before all those companies figured out how to not pay taxes.
So what I was going to say, though, is the main, I'd say the main, and of course these are Trump supporters that I find myself interacting with, but nonetheless, one of the main responses that I get is, because I didn't like Hillary.
Yeah.
Like, I voted for Trump because I decided that I liked him better than I liked Hillary. And so in throwing support to people in this election, those in coming from a Democrat liberal perspective, we needed to be a candidate that somebody who kind of teetotals around the middle can look at and not say, well, I still like Trump better than them. Like, that's like the things to be considered in this election are very, very different than what might traditionally be considered, even what would have been considered in 2016.
You're going to be going up against a president who has delivered record low unemployment. Unemployment is the lowest it has been in my lifetime and in U.S. history. Record employment for minorities and very, very limited use and almost zero reckless use of our military. Those are three powerful arguments to keep him in office. And the Democrats are going to have to come into this either with ideas that are better than that or with some sort of argument, which is what they've been trying to make up to this point, that that's not good. There's one candidate, I forget who it is, It might be Michael Bloomberg, now that I think about it, whose basic premise of his campaign, Pete Buttigieg is using the how can Republicans look their kids in the eyes and say they voted for Trump? Well, simple. You got food on the table and a roof over your head, and I'm saving money to send you to college.
Yeah.
That's how I answer that question. Ideas, not smears, Mr. Buttigieg. Michael Bloomberg is running on this message of Donald Trump has convinced us that we need to sell our soul as a nation to have a good economy. I'm here to tell you that's not true. And Michael Bloomberg is my other winner of the New Hampshire primary, and I will tell you why. My 30-30-40, right? You know what those numbers mean. For the listeners who don't know what those numbers mean, 30% of the country is hardcore left, 30% of the country is hardcore right, 40% is in the middle. Take a look at the results of the New Hampshire primary. Bernie Sanders won. You got 26% of the vote. Pete Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar combined got about 45% of the vote.
Yeah.
There's your 30. There's your 40.
40, yeah.
Okay. What has happened in our politics in recent years, particularly during primary season, is that the hardcore left gets hopped up. They're engaged. They're activists. And the campaigns pander to them because they know they will show up and vote. It is a favorable environment for a progressive candidate like Bernie Sanders. And it is a hostile environment for a moderate candidate like Pete Buttigieg. This is why Pete Buttigieg is one of my winners in this. Because in an environment that does not favor a moderate candidate, he's performing well. Democrats, you know, and caucus-going Democrats and primary-voting Democrats who overwhelmingly tend to be way on the left end of the spectrum are either being outnumbered by the normies coming in at the last minute and saying, I like Mayor Pete, or only the hardest of the hardcore are going for Bernie Sanders. Michael Bloomberg is counting on this. Michael Bloomberg wants Bernie Sanders to be the leader on Super Tuesday.
Yeah.
So that Michael Bloomberg can walk in and say, do you want a candidate that is going to lose because he's only supported by the most hardcore leftists, or do you want to beat Donald Trump? Boom. And he has spared himself all of the need to pander to that base that tends to wound moderate candidates.
Well, and I was going to say, to be honest with you, you probably were expecting me to fight you on this. But from the first moment that I saw, and Aunt Margaret, if you're listening, I'm sorry. I'm doing my job and speaking to truth. I am speaking to logical, fact-based truth. I don't necessarily want this to happen, so don't throw something at me from Connecticut. The first time I saw a Michael Bloomberg ad, and you know, he entered the race fairly late compared to the other Democratic candidates. I watched his ad and said, there's someone who can beat Donald Trump. Because exactly like what I was talking about, the middle-of-the-road teetotalers, the ones that go, it's like, he's not scary to moderates. You know what I mean? Like, moderates will look at Bernie Sanders and go, or he's not scary to people who aren't far left. Let's put it that way.
Right.
So, like people can look at him. People, even Republicans can look at him and go, well, I mean, he's a businessman.
He loses on the gun issue. That's my concern. He loses on the gun issue.
Yes, but
he cannot. He's unelectable because flyover country is never going to elect a president that wants to take their guns away. And this is the poster boy for I want to take your guns away.
True. But
not only does he have to change that position, he needs to convince America that he's changed that position.
Yeah, he needs to. I was going to say, he needs to. Wow, he's only 5'8". He needs to make it very clear if he does change that it's not a, so I'm going to say this until like after November, and then I'm just going to flip-flop and do the exact opposite.
And keep in mind that Republicans like him because he used to be a Republican.
He used to be a Republican, and the dude looks like a Republican.
Yeah.
Like, I remember when I was studying elections like in middle school, And this is, I always like to think of middle school as when they start to burst your bubble in terms of like how the world really works. But they were, we were looking at an election poll of JFK of, what would that have been, 1960? The 1960 election?
Yeah.
And it said like, so what made you vote? Because he died in 63.
Yeah, 1960.
60. So what made you vote for John F. Kennedy Jr.? Something like 42%. Oh, I like how he looks behind a podium.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing is that, I mean, we're definitely, as a country, much more politically aware and involved than we used to be, thanks, internet. But nonetheless, a lot of times it really does still come down to, like, I mean, I'm not an Elizabeth Warren fan, but her whole, like, come get a beer with Elizabeth Warren campaign, I thought was brilliant. Because, like, that's, I mean, I think about the episode of Parks and Recreation when Leslie's running for city council and they do the focus group. And a guy says, he's like, I don't like her. She doesn't seem like the type of person you could get a beer with. It's like a lot of times people really do just vote based on crap like that.
Yeah, but at the same time, if you gave her a hood and a battle axe, she's Skeletor. So it is WMFO Medford. We are going to continue our look at the New Hampshire primary after this. These are some FCC mandated things.
They make us do
They make us do. And also some things that we like to do right here on WMFO Medford.
Of salmonella. This is the sound of salmonella gyrating on your undercooked chicken. And it looks like mom might be taking it out a little early. Don't let salmonella get funky with your chicken. On average, 1 in 6 Americans will get a foodborne illness this year. So use a thermometer to cook each type of meat to the right temperature. Keep your family safe at foodsafety.gov. Brought to you by the USDA, HHS, and the Ad Council.
Don't know why there's no sun up in the sky. Stormy weather.
Your Boston 5-day forecast calls for return of winter. Winter is back, kids. Break out them sweaters and parkas. You're going to need the parka. Tonight, we got rain and snow moving in here. Temperature's going to drop down around freezing, below freezing. If you are west of 495, you can expect a couple inches of snow on the ground tomorrow morning. If you are east of 495, particularly if you are in the immediate greater Boston area, maybe we get an inch. That's what we're looking at right now. So expect some snow wherever you are tomorrow morning. It's going to be a messy, sloppy, nasty commute no matter what. Whether or not you have to bust out the snowblower depends on where you live. Tomorrow, the temperature warms up into the low 40s. The snow turns to rain. Then it falls back into the 20s tomorrow night. Friday, it stays in the 20s during the day under sunny skies. It drops down into the teens and single digits.
I'm going to have to beg your pardon real quick. Did you just say the S word on
teens,
the air?
Snow. Yeah, snow tonight. Teens and single digits Friday
Dudes.
Night, Valentine's Day night. Bring a parka. But you know what's good about teens on Valentine's Day night? No, not the unplanned pregnancy.
I was going to say, oh my God, you beat me to the joke, damn it.
Those cold temperatures just make you want to snuggle up.
I was going to say, that snuggling weather.
Good night.
Phoebe has kittens. That's who I'm snuggling with on Friday.
Good night for snuggling. You can snuggle all day Saturday, too, because it is going to struggle to get above freezing. Temperatures fall back into the mid-20s Saturday night. And then Sunday, a little bit more like it's been lately, partly cloudy, highs in the mid-40s, lows right around freezing Sunday night. So just a little brief burst of winter for your Valentine's Day. Little brief burst of winter, and then we're back into this sort of, mild, whatever this has been, weather that we've been having.
Well, Friday is actually my brother's birthday as well.
Nice.
So, happy birthday, Daniel Joseph Thomas.
Does he want to take my wife out for dinner? Because Lord knows I don't want to. It is WMFO Medford.
He's probably, well, that's what I always say. I'm like, Danny, you never have to really make a big deal about Valentine's Day with your girlfriends because it's like, screw you, it's my birthday.
On the Town with Mikey D coming your way in 1 hour. Before that, we're going to talk about some more about the New Hampshire primary, coronavirus, and new movies coming out this week here on WMFO Medford.
snow.